The following episode of Fear the Boot deals with handling sensitive subjects in your role-playing game. While it maintains the usual rating of a Fear the Boot episode, it includes candid discussions of social issues such as race, religion, politics, and violence. If you are bothered by discussions of these issues, or playing the show in the presence of anyone this content would be inappropriate for, please exercise proper discretion. It's Wednesday, January 10th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 34 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on yon mics with me tonight are Adam.
Thank you.
Now look at that. John.
Oh. Hey there.
And Chad.
It's your big day, Adam.
That's right.
Now, Chad, before we get into all the meaty topics we have tonight, I've got a bone to pick with you about a spicy subject. Would you like to tell us about Worldwide Wing Night, the first official Fear the Boot holiday?
Yes. What date is it again?
Worldwide Wing Night is this January, Friday the 26th. And it probably would have made a lot more sense if I'd said that as this Friday, January 26th.
I was about to say, that is the weirdest date declaration I've ever heard in my life.
You haven't been to Europe.
It was
they do
Canadian.
It all out of order.
That's gross.
Or possibly Canada as well.
Yeah. So Friday, January the 26th, we are doing it here in St. Louis at 7 p.m.
What are we doing?
Feel free to do this whenever you like in your hometown.
He asked you first.
I know.
But you flubbed.
We are, as Fear the Boot, and any Fear the Booters who wish to come with us in St. Louis, are going to a bar, and the name of the bar and the address of the bar and the time, the location, all that, is on our forums. We have a thread dedicated to this. We are going out for beer and hot wings, and we want all of you to join us. Go to your local bar, find some Fear the Booters in your area, get a bunch of people up, go to a bar, and get some beer and wings.
And if they don't listen to Fear the Boot, just grab your buddies and tell them about Fear the Boot at Worldwide
Wing
Night.
And even if they don't care, take them for beer and wings, because believe it or not, we like it, and we haven't been doing Fear the Boot since we liked beer and wings.
And if you are in a country that has no wings, time to move. Come to America. We
time
have
to
wings
just
here.
Flap your way on over.
I'm trying to get some kind of a sponsor so we have prizes to give away on Worldwide Wing Night. And right now I'm looking at Tyson. My goal is to have 600 pounds of chicken to give away.
Here you go, 600 pounds of raw chicken. Hope you got a big trunk. But go out that night at that time, whatever time that is in your time zone, which would be 7, no matter what your time zone is. But
nice.
Like that? Take some pictures, post them on our forums, send them to us an email. We'll post them on our forums and join us, if not in person, then in spirit.
You know, I always have to make my own orders on these wing outings because I'm probably one of the few people in this group. I love chicken wings. I love barbecue wings.
You're
going to
say you like
wings.
The wimpy wings.
I don't
you?
Like buffalo wings.
You don't like them hot, or you just don't like the
I
buffalo
don't like stuff? The buffalo flavor.
Huh.
It's not a spicy thing. Like I said, I like barbecue, teriyaki. You know, I prefer more kind of a medium, little bit of kick, but I don't even really care if they're spicy. I just don't like the flavor of buffalo.
They're not really made of buffalo, you know. They're made of chicken.
I got that.
Okay.
Cool. I was there for that meeting.
Yep. He had to go to Wikipedia, search buffalo wings. It's like, there's no bison in this.
I don't taste a difference.
Yeah, I'm far too plebeian to have such established taste. I just look over at Adam or Chad and say, hey, 50 or 100. They say 100. And
we get
a wings picture
of Bud Light and everything's good.
That's okay, though, because if I'm not mistaken, the place we're going does indeed have barbecue wings. So
it does. It has teriyaki wings as well.
I will still be able to participate in W3N night with all of my Fear the Boot friends. Anyway, if you guys are in St. Louis, we really do hope you'll join us because we have met some of our St. Louis listeners, but I know we have a lot more than we've met. And if you're not in St. Louis, hey, like we were saying, you know, find some place that serves them in your area.
Yeah, and take some pictures and join us in spirit.
All pictures must have pants.
Ooh. Or some other sort of lower garb. If you want to wear a skirt, that's fine. It's probably better if you're a girl, though.
Or if you're Scottish.
That's
or
also
your
fursuit.
Acceptable. You could wear your fursuit.
You could wear
well.
Your fursuit and post provocatively and email it to Adam.
Yep.
Adam, I'm curious. I know if it's like a mammal, it's furry porn. If it's a reptile, it's scaly porn. What is it when it's a bird?
Avian porn.
Avian porn? Is that what it's called?
Sorry to tread on your toes, Adam, but
it doesn't matter.
It's absolutely what it's called.
Whatever you say is just going to get attributed to me anyway.
Feathery porn.
That's true, it is.
You know, Chad, the other day we were talking about TV shows that we miss. And I got to say, as an adult, I put these TV shows into two categories. Some of these shows are shows that I miss, and they were genuinely good, and the world did not appreciate them sufficiently, and they are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
The other category, I love these shows because I was a kid, and that was about it.
Right.
Like, for our anniversary, Carla was a big Voltron fan, so I got her the tins that they're releasing the Voltron episodes in, which I got to say, actually, it's pretty nice packaging.
Yeah.
It's like these metal sculpted things that look like the lions. And we popped it in, and I never remembered Voltron as being a good show.
Holy crap, I gotta say, bad. I mean, I hated it as a kid.
Yeah, it had definitely turned to vinegar by the time Adam and I were of its viewing age, and none of us ever liked it.
I don't understand the people who are like, oh my god, Voltron's so good. Or not even Voltron. Stuff like Scooby-Doo.
I think people love the idea of Voltron.
Yeah. And they love the idea of Scooby-Doo because they grew up on Scooby-Doo and
Scooby-Doo and the Boo Brothers. I rented it. It's still good.
Yeah.
It's still gold.
Uh-huh. Scooby-Doo, it's like, it's the same episode over. It's like A-Team or Voltron or any number of 180s right. cartoons. It's the same episode over, not even formulaic.
Scooby-Doo is before the 80s, dude.
Well, yeah, it is.
Okay.
But, you know, what I'm saying, though, is how...
Yeah.
Voltron was even worse than formulaic. The voice acting was terrible. Yeah. The animation was terrible. The plots, you forget the repetition. A lot of times, they're just outright nonsensical. I don't understand how someone who was an adult made this show and felt good about it when they were done. Plus, I think people love the idea of it, that it's really cool to think about robotic lions that protect a castle and form into a giant robot
and
fight
kids
other
fluff.
Giant robots.
Great kids fluff.
And I've heard they're working on some kind of a Voltron movie right now.
No.
And
God help us.
If they drastically clean it up and mature it, I could see how you could get a good movie out of this concept.
It's not just children's movies. The same thing happened with Sliders. I remember that show being
Sliders.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I loved it at age 13 or so.
You know, another one that's like that is, for me, is Quantum Leap. My mom and I, every night it was on, we'd be running to the TV, we'd watch the whole thing, we'd be glued to the sets, love it. Recently, I watched an episode of Quantum Leap. Ooh, bad.
You know, I'm curious, in 10 years, when we're still doing this podcast and getting paid millions of dollars a year, will we look back at things like Stargate SG-1 and Atlantis and the new Battlestar and say, man... What were we on that we enjoyed those
I'd rather
shows?
Look back at the Stargate Atlantis and the new Battlestar than look back on Fear the Boot and say, oh my god, what was this crap? I was so immature when I enjoyed this.
What do you mean I didn't like Shadowrun? Yeah. That's gold!
Adam, I recognize that this is a full possibility, not one that I would discount, but I don't think that's inevitable because I can also look back on some shows from back then.
Yeah, I agree.
Were either as good as I remember, in some cases, I think they were better than I remember because I didn't appreciate them fully at the time. You guys threw out the example of The Critic.
Oh, my God. I
Critic's
love The Critic.
Good.
Yeah. The Critic, yeah.
Was a show you guys, I just never got into it. No strong opinion on it either way, but you guys really enjoyed it, and it was came and went like two seasons.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of shows like that I really like, and I'm sure I'm going to say this, and people are going to write it, oh, those shows were horrible. I hate them.
Yeah,
so can't be. Probably.
No, Chad, you just want them to do that. Keep going.
Baby. But Magnum P.I., I was a big fan of Magnum P.I. I watched it a lot, and Rockford Files.
Have you gone back and watched either recently?
Rockford Files, no. That's a little hard to find, but Magnum P.I., yeah. And
I'm not
going to
slam Magnum P.I. for what it was. If you enjoy it for the 80s camp effect, power to you.
Believe me, it wasn't anything. It wasn't high Shakespeare or anything like that, but it was what it was. It was interesting crime drama, some comedy. Fast cars, shooting a gun, action.
You know, Family Guy was kind of, not like that, but it fits into this category. I was about to say it's like that, and I actually know it's not a high crime drama. It's like that in that it fits in that category, because when Family Guy first came out, it ran like two or three seasons, and then was run off the air. I don't know if the network wasn't interested in or didn't have a lot of viewership, but it came and went, and it took a popular outcry over a very long period of time to get that show brought back.
Well, the very first episode of the new seasons Peter lists off all the shows that came and were canceled so that Family Guy's time slot could be free, and he goes on for like two solid minutes. And bang, 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 bang.
I got it. I haven't seen that episode. Oh, it's,
it is gold.
A show that I was really into that came and went in one season is a show that in my entire life, I've talked to a lot of people about this show. I have met to date one person and only one person who has ever heard of the show. It was a show called Nowhere Man.
I've heard of it.
It was, yeah, because I've told you about it.
Yeah.
It was on.
I feel like I've watched it. He's told us about it a lot.
Yeah. It was on at like 2 a.m. and it was a show that I really liked because it was fairly heady. It was about this guy, kind of a spy sort of movie. He'd been working for some intelligence agency, or I don't remember what the details. No, he's a photographer. That's what it was. He's a photographer, and his life just disappears. Comes home one day. His wife's not there. What used to be his house is now something completely different. What used to be his studio was now a completely different building. And he spends this whole thing trying to figure out why these people took his life away. And when they catch him in a situation where it's like, there's six guys and there's him right there, they didn't use this Deus Ex Machina crap where like somebody pops up to save him or the lead bad guy drops his gun. No, they actually had him think his way out of it. And I really loved the show for that. And it, like I said, it was around, I believe, only one season and then was gone from the air. And I got to think it has something to do with the time slot they put it in, at least in this market, because there's nobody but me sitting up at 2 a.m. that wants to watch that kind of TV.
Yeah. What about you guys? Were you guys fans of any shows that, like, nobody else heard of, but you absolutely loved and adored, and they're just not around anymore?
Not really. When I was growing up, and even now, I was really a more Nintendo computer, or God help us, go to my friend's house and just dick around. I didn't watch the TV really at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Nintendo getting computer? More into it now. Yeah. I'm following a few shows, but my current platter of perhaps 4 series I'm following is absolutely the biggest I've ever had in my life.
I probably watched more TV in the last year than the first 15 years of my life.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
See, with me, it's the exact opposite. When I was a teenager and younger and up to basically from when I was a little kid up to 20, I was a TV junkie. I mean, I watched everything constantly, couch potato, watched all the shows and stuff. But when I turned about 22, 23, I got out of it. I mean, that was when they kind of were putting on some really bad stuff. That was all of the reality shows and whatnot that were coming out.
And do consider the alternatives you had available to you in the early 90s when you were turning 22 and 23. I mean, we have World of Warcraft, Civilization, right. Medieval 2. We have all these games every month.
The PlayStation 1
5
one
new
came
ones
out,
that you turned
23
I can't pass
in 2000,
up.
By the way.
Chad turned 23 in 2000?
He's 30.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, whatever.
But, no, and right now, I don't watch TV. I mean, I can't think of a single show on television that I watch with any regularity. Now, I watch a good amount of Japanese animation, and I watch a ton of movies, and I play a ton of video games, and I read a lot.
But it's all post-fact DVD or internet or whatever.
Right,
you never actually watch a show as it's airing.
You know, I don't watch a ton of TV right now either. In fact, I don't know through much of my life that I really have.
Like, we know you're a big House fan.
Yeah, I watch House.
Ooh, House is art, not
the,
TV.
The only other TV I really watch, Carla watches CSI, so if I'm in the living room, I'll catch that. And a lot of times when I'm playing World of Warcraft or working on the computer, I'll have the History Channel on in the background, which I'm kind of half-watching. But, you know, even growing up, I didn't watch a lot of TV because my parents did not want us rotting in front of the TV all the time, which on the one hand, I'm glad for because I probably did a lot of things then that I'm still riding on now that I would not have accomplished if I'd been sitting behind the TV. But on the flip side, I also missed a lot of really the iconic cultural things of the 80s. I mean, I can sit down and watch TV Land, and for me, these are all brand new shows. I have never seen these shows, never seen these episodes. And I guess kind of the lingering result of that is really I just never got that much into TV. Yes, shows come along I really like I'm a big Simpsons fan, like Family Guy, watch History Channel, as I said, in House. But even these, I typically forget to watch them unless it just happens they're on in the background, and that's how I catch them.
Thank the good Lord you got a TiVo.
Yeah, we do, and this one actually works. Our last one locked up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Forum post I want to kick out there. This is something that falls somewhere between banter advice and Skies of Glass Q&A. It's just spread.
All three?
Yes. It's,
wow.
It's like, you know when you're driving down the interstate and you hit that one moth, and despite being the size of a quarter, it goes from one end of your windshield to the other.
Did I ever tell you about how I killed the king of the moths?
I was there. We killed.
No.
They
I
have
found
a feudal
one
monarchy?
Bigger.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I killed the moth.
Let me set
God.
This up. Let me set this up. I thought we had done this already. That the moths had a god and we killed it. Because
no, the god had a god and I killed it.
Oh, my. When I was growing up, and Chad was growing up as well, we had borrowed my parents' Suburban. And this was a big 1980-something Suburban. This thing was a monster. In fact, the particular one they had was actually a surplus of a model that was meant for construction sites.
Wow. So this thing probably got like 12 gallons to the mile.
AM radio. Oh,
12 that's
miles
generous.
To the gallon.
Had no. Only an AM radio. There was no upholstery in it, just like a vinyl floor.
I think it literally had a machine gun mount on the top. I never knew what that thing was sticking out of
it. Yeah, the front and back ends had separate zip codes. And as we were driving down Old Interstate 21, or I guess it's actually Highway 21, Old Highway 21, we came up to a turn, and as we were driving along, a moth hit the windshield, and I swore it was a bird. That's how I'm not making this up. That's how big it was.
And mind you, this is Missouri. Maybe you live in some other country where they have like moths the size of dogs,
such
or something.
As the Amazon,
right,
which is actually Brazil.
Because you know we have a lot of listeners in Brazil, but
we do.
I think we have
out in the Amazon itself.
Yeah.
They broadcast it from trees.
Yeah. The trees themselves.
That's why Fear the Boot is on the internet and ham radio.
But in Missouri, a moth this size is a very big
surprise.
Okay.
A moth is like the size of a quarter, or which is real helpful to those of you not in the country. a moth is, let's say, maybe 3 centimeters across.
About a 50 euro cent piece as well.
Yeah. And nice. So we're driving all I hear is, bam, look down, and caught on the windshield wiper is a moth, and the spread of its wings, and I've got big hands, is probably wider than I could spread my thumb from my pinky. I mean, it is a monstrous specimen.
When you hit an animal that is the size of a baseball and it's a moth, something has gone horribly wrong.
Something
awry.
Was, and Chad and I both, we were in shock. Yeah. We could not believe what we were looking at.
It was huge.
It's just like, this does not occur. It's like you're sitting in a lake and a sea monster comes out. Your first response is just shock because you can't believe what you're looking at. And I turned to Chad. The words out of my mouth was, the moths have a god, and we have just killed it. Their pantheon has fallen. But now you're telling me that this pantheon has an over-god.
You it killed does. A deputy that god.
There is you're telling me there is an AO to this moth pantheon.
Yes. So I get off work. I'm driving down the highway coming home. And I have this Ford Aerostar van that's back in the day.
I remember this.
I don't have it anymore. Did I know you when
yes,
I had the van?
Yeah, it's kind of a bluish, powder blue color.
It was really ugly.
Yeah, you're a big sex fan.
Yeah, sex fan. It was really ugly. But anyway, I was driving down, had the window open, had my arm out, and it was the middle of the night, and I'm just kind of cruising. All of a sudden, I hear this, pap! I mean, it's just loud. Pap! Right by my ear, and I feel this sharp, wet pain on my neck. No clue what happened. The only thing that I could think of is, oh my God, have I been shot? I thought that some car pulled beside me, maybe shot me or threw something at me, or I don't know what. I'm just like, all's I know, sharp, wet pain, loud pop sound, and I'm just in a daze and it hurt. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? So I pull over real quick. And I turn the I stop, I breathe for a second, turn the interior light
no
on.
No bullet in the trachea. That's the first good sign.
Yeah, I can breathe. Yeah, I'm not bleeding. Well, I take my hand across my neck, and it's wet. But it's not blood. It's like this goo. I'm like, what the hell? And I look off to the left, and the door frame, because my window was open, is like bits and pieces of moth wing and moth bits and this moth splat, and I'm like, what the hell? And then I look over to the right, and where the passenger would sit, where they had put their feet, is half of a moth the size of the moth Dan described. I have no clue where the other half is.
And you looked up, and a third of the stars had been swept from the sky. The moon was blood.
It was
the depths offered their
crazy
dead.
Okay. So getting back to the moth that is smeared across the metaphorical window.
It was this fighter mage priest of a post that we've dug up that happens to do everything.
There was a post that was made by Mick from over at the Harping Monkey podcast.
He's good people.
He is good people. And he's not just a good person. He is good people. Yeah. He is a demographic of goodness unto himself.
Indeed.
And he made a post that was like this metaphorical moth across the windshield of our podcast. Which is really both banter and advice and
SOG
Q&A, Skies of Glass Q&A, all at once.
Analogy.
Yeah, it was poetry. Two tangents, a story, an analogy, a SOG question, a QA, Harping Mick, thank you for single-handedly destroying episode 34.
A man who spends his whole life searching for the perfect lotus bloom has not wasted his life. Or something else out of The Last Samurai. Anyway, continue.
Wow.
I think he has. Now John has completely put me off balance.
I was going to connect that with this big old firm bridge, and didn't happen.
You don't have to moderate.
If I had a copy of the Hagakure or whatever it's called sitting next to me, I'd read a passage out of it just to get things back on topic. What is that book called?
That is the Hagakure.
I got it right. Shot in the dark and got a three-pointer. The question that Mick brought up was this, or the point he brought up was this. We talked about in the last episode with micro setting how we wanted to be sure to develop a fairly detailed micro setting because it concerned us that a lot of games give a very thin setting, which does not really well convey feel or give you a lot of things to work with on the fly or really help you kind of draw the game into the setting that they have put out. And he agreed with us, but he kind of threw out as just sort of a juxtaposition to that, that some people would almost see that as tethering, because while they certainly would want a well-developed macro setting and a well-developed feel, once you get to the micro setting in their mind, this is where the creativity of the individual game master kicks in. And so maybe you'd be better off not saying things like who the mayor of this town is, assuming he doesn't fit into the macro setting, that he's just mayor of whatever bumpkin town. Mm. Just don't define him and allow the creativity of the individual game master to take over so they can define that setting really to their own taste and for their own game.
Not to steal Mick's thunder, but there were a couple posts that expressed concerns about how we were advocating too much detail in the micro setting.
Yeah, and Mick did post this in all fairness at the end of a thread. So this was not necessarily he was not the one that started this off. He kind of posted really what struck me as sort of the collected thesis of this position and articulated it fairly well, which is why I'm picking on Mick.
I see. So good grammar is punished.
So in the end, do we agree with him or disagree with him? Personally, I say disagree. You can't have too much setting. And as far as taking away things that the game master could use, we plan on writing in areas of that are just open. You know, that we say, oh, maybe there's a city there or something like that, but that's for the game master development. That's just play areas for them.
And unlike TSR or WotC, we'll actually stick to that.
This is why I agree with them. I agree that we're running almost the whole spectrum of this, that while we're clearly defining some areas, we're leaving those other areas wide open. So a game master has a lot of flexibility in where they want to go.
We're not going to say, well, you can't make up your own little town in Georgia because we took up all the room and now you're breaking canon.
Yeah. And then we send the FTB ninjas to break your kneecaps. Yeah.
To give my kind of take on this, let me talk around Mick at Alia's point for a moment. When I first read that you know, you guys are, by developing everything, or if you were to develop everything, would take away the creativity of the game master, my first thought was back to the way Chad and I used to talk about D&D. Is Gary going to come over to the house and break your kneecaps?
It'd be pretty cool if Gary came over to the house, but not if he was going to break your kneecaps.
Attempted to break my kneecaps.
Just because someone releases a ton of setting, even if it was developed down to the finest detail, there is absolutely nothing that says a game master has to use it. I do this myself when I run Forgotten Realms. I tell my guys, look, I don't keep up with the novels the way you do. I played the Gold Box game. This is as far as my knowledge of the realm goes. I am going to run my take on the realm, so when we walk into a town, what is going to be here is what I make up to be there, not necessarily what you guys think is there. But when they pass through some little way town along the way, I can pull out my setting handbook, flip to that town, read up that town, and real quick, I can tell them this is what's there. So you can choose to keep it or to toss it out. But having said that, I think there's kind of this subconscious human desire that if there's material there, that's what you feel is the correct material that should be used. So you kind of get this sort of subconscious hamstringing that even if we are not, Fear the Boot's not going to come to your house and break your kneecap for changing Skies of Glass, there's still this kind of feel that, well, this is what's written on Skies of Glass, therefore this is what we should use. So I kind of cut the difference on the point there. But how I would respond to the way we are going to deal with this, and this is where the Skies of Glass Q&A thing comes in, we're actually kind of going halfway on that. Like, if you look at what I put out for Linden, Tennessee, we are developing a lot of details. So if you want to have someone walk into a town, you can pull this and know what's there. But we're also leaving a lot of things unsaid. For example, I develop in there the whole Sparks House, which actually is a real historic site standing right there right now. And I talk about this as being a significant, important place, but I really don't say a whole lot about it. Mm-hmm. That I say, yeah, it's kind of a hotel and candy shop, and it's an important place, and a lot of people visit there. I don't tell you who's running it. I don't tell you what's unfolding there. I don't talk about any of that. I imply a lot of political things as well that I don't develop. For example, I talk about there being this rivalry between the mayor and another woman, and I talk about there being people on her side that are trying to do things to unseat the mayor, defy none of them.
In that document, too, you, when you run a game of SOG, you don't have to play Linden, Tennessee, or any of these other places, but we still want that stuff in there because it translates the feel to you. It gives you the feel that this is what a town in this area of SOG, or Skies of Glass, is actually like.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
And it's not possible for us to do the entire southeast of the United States in the detail that that Dan spent on Linden. It's not possible.
Or, and believe me, as I was picking Linden, I was town shopping that whole area around Tennessee. And there are tons of small towns that probably survived the bomb just fine right around Linden. I'm not going to develop that. I don't want to set a number here, but when we do a state, I mean, you're talking just simply because of the restrictions on us, just in terms of space and time, we're talking like developing half a dozen-ish spots there. And I'm not holding to this number. So if it turns out to be 3 or turns out to be 100, you know, I'm just talking out of my butt right here because I have no idea.
Very nice.
But butt talk.
Let's look at this way. Linden, Tennessee's write-up, the way I typed it, was about 5 pages long. Mm-hmm. Now, you put this in an RPG handbook with smaller print, you might get a little more, but then lose some of the pictures. But let's say that in one section of the U.S., let's say 10 states, let's say we do 6 cities in each with that level of detail, mm-hmm. that's 300 pages.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see right there, we are not going to dry clean these states for you. I mean, there's going to be tons of space for you to develop yourself.
Exactly. And how we convey the feel of SOG, or how we want to convey the feel of SOG, cannot be done by just giving you a simple timeline of events. Because when on our field document, we want to look at the culture of an area. We want to know what the people are like, what the people are doing, and how they're living and what they're living at, not the major events that happen in history. Now, we're going to look at that, and we want to develop that, but we want to develop more and give you this full world, to give a full world for the game master to run a game in.
Let me throw out a little anecdote from real life. Someone once taught me, and I guess this is really more of a tidbit of wisdom or a proverb than an anecdote, but a friend of mine who's not on this podcast once told me there's a big difference between knowing and understanding. As an example, I can tell you about Niagara Falls. I can quote you statistics about how many gallons of water per second pour over that thing and what kind of force that exerts and blah, blah, blah. And you can know Niagara Falls, but you do not understand Niagara Falls until you stood at the foot of it and looked up.
That's right. You do not understand Niagara Falls until you go over it in a barrel.
Naked, carrying a bomb.
I have been to Niagara Falls, but not with those conditions, so I guess I don't really get it.
And we have had people, as we're developing Skies of Glass, though they've not put it in those terms, say something similar to us. We've had people make posts specifically to say things like, you know what, when you guys gave your field document, I heard you. I gathered where you're coming from, and it made sense to me, but I didn't get what you were doing until I saw the setting. Mm-hmm. Until they saw that machine in motion. And then they're like, now I see what you guys are trying to accomplish.
And you know what? The stuff that you released for like Linden and all that, that is just conveying one section of the feel for one place. When you go to a different area, it's going to be different. The feel, it's still going to be the skies of glass feel, but it's going to be different.
So thank you, Mick, for and all everyone else that
for
contributed
allowing
to
us
that.
To plug our game.
Yes.
No, it was a good question, though. And actually, this plays into the broader RPGosphere in general. What you do with the micro setting, we're talking about a design series. And so kind of deciding how much micro setting there should be and talking about the dangers of it limiting your setting is really relevant to the broader mission of Fear the Boot, not just Skies of Glass. All right, let's get back to that game design series. We are going to take a kind of brief detour from the path we've been taking, because now that we are nearing the end of the soft subjects, we do have one or two more podcasts on this before we get down to all the numbers and the rules, the killing. But before we wrap up this, the series on soft topics, there's something that we have been talking about with Skies of Glass that in our game is going to be a relevant hurdle we are going to have to jump many times. Now, for your game, may not be. Depends on what you're developing. But for us, this is a big one, and we're sure this will be for a lot of other people. So the question for us, and by the way, there will not be a resource document for this. I apologize for that, but there's really nothing I can give you on this outside of what we're talking about here. So the question is, how do you appropriately handle divisive or offensive subjects in your role-playing game? Right at the top, let me tell you, forget unreasonable people. You can put anything on paper you want, and it will offend somebody.
The very nature of a role-playing
game is offensive
to people.
We are talking about if you take the reasonable role player or some segment of reasonable role players, you can say or do things in your game that will deeply offend people. Now, for a lot of games, like if you're doing a simple fantasy game, you may be able just to write around these. For Skies of Glass, we are talking about the real world. So we may have to deal with themes like racism, slavery, religion, religious bigotry, sexism, extreme violence, rape. These are all things that we cannot deny are out there in a post-nuclear world.
Sure we can.
But, well, I mean, we could.
We're in a pre-nuclear world, for that matter.
I mean, I guess we could, but this would violate the field document of realism. You know, we have to deal with these things on some level, but it is, on the flip side, not our desire to create a game that is so in-your-face and so offensive, generates controversy over all the wrong things.
And the subjects are rather dismal by nature, and we also have stated that we want to avoid making the most heart-crushing, soul-destroying setting you can think of.
Can you guys think of any games that aren't Skies of Glass that deal with really offensive subjects, either in a good way or a bad way?
I would probably bring around Vampire the Masquerade as the first one that comes to mind.
All of World of Darkness.
It's all sex tantalization when you get down to it, in my humble outside opinion.
Well, I mean, really, even being a vampire, what's it about? It's about sex, murder, and occultism.
Oh, yeah.
You do not exist without those three things, sex, murder, and occultism. Or I guess you do exist, but not really in the...
It's not World of Darkness.
Yeah, it's not World of Darkness. And even if you move away from the vampires, let's say you're playing a more noble werewolf, well, still, you're an occultic creature, you have to deal with a lot of very strong occultic themes.
And you flip out and kill people every once in a while.
Yeah, and you flip out and kill people whenever the moon moves you right. You know, I'm having trouble thinking of a whole lot more. I guess
didn't Shadowrun do racism?
Well, here,
yeah, Shadowrun did anti-troll racism.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that's distant enough for us to not get fired up about.
Not human racism, but actual biological racism.
Speciesism.
Yeah,
to use a PETA-ism that's kind of
a
bastardized.
A weak thing, because I was thinking about this before the podcast, and a lot of the examples I can come up with, they try to keep it real by having offensive themes in there, but they always talk around it. Like, racism being the good example. Yeah, we're racist, but it's against aliens, or it's against trolls and elves. Well, sit here.
Well, elves suck.
No, they do suck.
But, I mean, let's face it. Honestly, I mean,
trolls
are cool, though. People may have their opinions or may be fans of this race or that race, but this isn't offensive. This is not the same as writing a role-playing game where people hate black people or white people or Asians or whatever ethnic group you want to stick in there, or Christians are burning atheists, or the atheists are killing Christians, or, you know, these are much harder things to get away from. You can talk about Torm going out on purges and nobody cares.
But even in the execution of this troll racism, you guys were talking about your mud experiences in a very early episode, and you said that once a player got behind a troll and another player got behind a human and treated him like crap, there were OOC feelings hurt. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's true. And of course, you could really question how much of this is because we were being racist against trolls versus how much of this is they were assaulting another player who was getting his or her personal feelings hurt.
Even in that mud, that the admins and the opera, whatever they're called, were the people who are like creating the persistent universe of the game, were like, okay, Shadowrun has a lot of racism in it. And it does. Its history has tons and tons of purposeful racism in it. And no one is playing it. We need to start playing that. We're going to give rewards for playing stuff. And nobody did. I tried a little bit, but it's so isolated my character from people who are, you know, in character role playing because my character was so offensive. The thing is that all these other players who were offended by my IC behavior should have been on my side if they were playing really IC.
And, you know, I guess in a way, I kind of fault the setting of Shadowrun for that, because while they have it kind of in their higher field that there's this kind of hatred going on there, really it's not heavily discussed in the setting. Sure, they mention in passing organizations like Meta and Orc and whatever else was in there, but as you flip through the books, most of the violence they talk about, most of the organizations they talk about, it's gang-related or corporation-related. They really did not do a lot. I mean, they kind of quote these statistics that, yeah, everybody's racist, but then they really did nothing to actually motivate that into the setting.
It was all about class.
Yeah, it was about class or knowledge. Or,
you know, Rifts is like that, too. Rifts, some of it is that special thing where you got the DBs, I think they're called, and then the humans, and then there's a tension that plays off there that very few people actually play on. And then it's like poor people versus rich people.
You can have a little bit of that even in D&D. I mean, thinking about our current game...
Isn't feudalism all about class?
I am playing a very feudalistic paladin, lawful good guy. He loves the common peasantry, but he thinks they're completely beneath him, and this has caused division inside the group. I mean, you could illustrate that.
I've seen a little bit more honesty about some other issues that we'll lump in here. Alcohol and drug use. Though I think even with alcohol, for the most part, it's always some kind of comedy factor that, yeah, there's a bar here, and the dwarves come in and get drunk.
Where are the Cheetos?
That's just racism.
Roll to see if you fall over. Yeah. Well, I'm a dwarf, so I don't have far to fall.
And,
yeah, it's just comedy relief. And then drug use. With drug use, it's usually buttered up as either something that other people do. Yeah, there's this drug in here, and kind of this bums in the back alley use it. Or it's used as something in combat, like the Rift's juicer.
Yeah.
You've got some people get hopped up on performance drugs. You don't really deal with in great detail.
That's difficult to play, though.
The businessman who's cocaine addicted.
I tried to play a drug addict one time. We were playing Rifts, and I was playing a juicer. Okay, you're playing a juicer. You have these in performance-enhancing drugs, which are destroying you, and you're going to die in a year. Are you trying to tell me that this kind of person would never touch anything else? And so I had him addicted to recreational drugs as well. But that was just really hard to play. You're trying to role play, and then it's just like you do a line of blow in the bathroom, or it's it really didn't come into play.
No, we're talking about in character, Chad, not what you do during our gaming sessions.
No, during the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me play the hippie here. These issues that they put into the games, why?
Like, why do they purposely put them in, or why do people?
Why do they put them in?
Perhaps
why do they put them in?
Why would we?
Why do they put them in?
Out?
And then I'll go a step further and why do they put them in, and why do they not really explore them into detail?
You know, that's a great question. I think, and this would actually tie into the first bit of advice I would give on this subject.
I know.
I think the that was a good transition. Then congratulations.
I read the big board.
Someday you may be ready for the green mic.
I doubt it.
The why put it in there? The bit of advice I would get is go to your field document. Look at your field document and say, what is it you're trying to convey in this world? And if it's in your field document, you also got to ask yourself, what age and target audience are you going for? Because you got to understand, you start putting hardcore stuff in there, you're going to narrow your demographic to the kinds of people that can and should play this sort of game.
Right.
Yeah.
In the case of Skies of Glass, we were talking about a post-nuclear world, desperation, survival, the horrors of mankind sort of thing. This is a natural part of that.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to kill each other over a sandwich when starvation was powerfully there. With society falling apart, there are no longer any kind of civil rights laws in most places.
Yeah.
If you want to discriminate against this or that race or this or that religion or this or that social status, you're free to do it, assuming your local government allows it, which some of them may outright encourage.
Well, let me ask you this. You have something like, we'll say, rape. Horrible thing. How do you portray that in a game? How gratuitous do you make it?
Well, before I get to that, let me develop this thought a little bit more and say that I think what happens, Adam, to complete your thought, in a lot of these games is they kind of look at their feel and they say, yeah, it belongs in there, because you can't have a world that is like XYZ without having vice and evil A, B, and C. But they're so afraid of offending people or becoming gratuitous in the process of explaining them, they dance around it.
It's like
racism in Shadowrun. They just kind of skirt around it.
I wouldn't even be so afraid of offending people as I would be of creating a game that was a huge downer. I mean, when I go down to the role-playing table, I don't want to have to deal with
racism,
drug addiction, sex abuse.
I wouldn't say downer, I'd say pointed. Too preachy, like if you put too much of it in and you don't balance it correctly, your game has become racist.
Yeah.
That's also
very
true.
Very exceptional and important point. When you put any of the stuff in here, don't caricature it one way or the other. People who are racist are not evil to the core just because they do one thing bad. Similarly, people who are not racist are not your loving little saints and angels who have no evil to them.
People are people.
People are people. You know, if you want to talk about, let's move this over to religion, people of religious view A are not necessarily the best, most wonderful people in the world. People of religious view B or anti-religious view B or anti-religious view A or whatever you want to stick in there are not also the most evil people you ever meet. You've got to, be honest about the fact that, and we're not getting into this whether there's an ultimate truth or not, but the simple fact of the matter is people of any stripe, people of any disposition, people of any belief, any creed, any race, any whatever, have their strengths and weaknesses. You can be honest about the weaknesses without turning these people into caricatures just to make a point. I guess this maybe goes back to feel, but Adam, you're absolutely right that if you do this too far, the game has become preachy. It's just a platform to make some other point.
Opinionated, and you don't want to be opinion. Your game doesn't want to be opinionated.
Well, maybe it does, but in our case, it doesn't.
If your field document is you hate black people, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly. Huh. Well,
I guess there's a market for that.
Well, but that's not the only one. Let's take it this way. One of the examples we talked about when we were writing on the big board, getting ready for this, is let's say that I wanted to make a Chronicles of Narnia role playing game. You cannot deny the Christian allegory, Chronicles of Narnia. Chronicles of Narnia takes a very strong stance that Christianity is right. And obviously that stance is going to be offensive to a certain demographic of people. That's part of the feel of it. If you take it out of there, you have not told the story of Chronicles of Narnia.
There was controversy over the movie of that a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Similarly, let's say that some people have asked us, are you guys going to include something like global warming and skies of glass? Is there going to have been a series of ecological disasters leading up to the nuclear disaster? Well, if we go into that and make a big deal out of it, we have now taken a political position.
And we have an inconvenient game.
Just like we had an inconvenient podcast several ones ago. And so I don't think you have to just go so far as saying, we have the D20 version of lynching.
Your lynch chart.
Yeah, I mean, you go something as absurd as that, and obviously you've got a pretty clear-cut situation of this is tasteless. But you can have things along the way that are not necessarily stupidly tasteless, and yet are still going to fall into that category of being offensive to somebody. And you've got to ask, Shadowrun, once again, the racism against orcs and trolls and such. This could be offensive to somebody. The people that are addicted to SimSense. This could be offensive to somebody.
All right, now let me take this a point further and steal Chad's question.
Oh.
If you are going to put these things into the game, and you're going to keep them realistic, how detailed do you get with them?
That is a dangerous, dangerous balance.
That's why I asked.
Do you show pictures of burning crosses and hang black people? Do you show pictures in an adult book of people getting raped and tortured?
I would say absolutely not. That would strike me as Dan's utterly tasteless.
You know what I would recommend is I would take in hand all the stack of documents that you have prepared to this point. Look at your feel. Look at your macro setting. Look at your intended player roles. Ask yourself the hard question. What needs to be in there to enable these things without becoming gratuitous? For example, I don't think, in the case of Skies of Glass at least, that we would need rules, like 3 pages of rules on how to conduct a rape. It's just, once again, it'd fall into tasteless.
I really can't think of any game where you would need 3 rules.
I can't either. I'm being absurd. if you put that in there, you know, I would sit down and say, look, we look at our field. Okay, yes, we do talk about human depravity, but you know what? Probably in our case, it is sufficient to mention in the setting that rape occurs and then allow game masters to decide how they want to deal with that. And maybe even in some cases, making rape very real, that a major person in some town is the victim of rape, and this has led her or him or whatever to go on and to do something in particular that was motivated by this. We can draw into the setting in a way that's maybe a little bit more relevant, a little more real than what some of these other games we've mentioned have done, without going down to the level of needing rules for it and dedicated sections of the setting document dedicated purely to that. However, if we talk about something like racism, I think we may have to dedicate parts of the setting to that. Because you can go across parts of the world where racism is very prevalent. Let's even move away from the obvious American example, black on white. Let's talk about the whole gaijin thing in Japan. If we develop a book setting for Japan, you have to deal with Japanese racism against non-Asiatic races and even some Asiatic races. And we would have to talk about that in the setting. But I would draw the two big rules I would put on this is, number one, do not caricature. You know, not every white person hates a black person as some country bumpkin, farmer, hick, uneducated, whatever, just as not every Japanese person that hates white people is therefore immediately, you know, fill in stereotype here. And secondly, don't be gratuitous. That if this is not absolutely necessary to conveying your feel, to enabling your macro setting, to enabling player roles, then maybe it's just best left on the down low. Well, you know, let's move from this to talking about ones that you do have to develop. For example, we had talked about in Skies of Glass potentially developing drug use because very real in world history, throughout the 20th century, there have been very real examples in actual history of research into performance-enhancing drugs for like soldiers and such. They were
That kind of drug use.
Well, Stimpaks.
Okay.
No, I'm not even Stimpaks. Yeah, they're actually used in like World War II and such. You can look at LSD, which was developed before sodium pentothal as a truth serum.
Yeah, we saw that in The Good Shepherd.
Yeah, but you know, you can come up with drugs that actually have very potent intended uses in military intelligence applications. If we are going to allow those things, we had talked about certain cities, for example, maybe they have sort of like a might makes right kind of mentality. And in those cities, there may be a very real motivation to shoot up on PCP.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to do that,
the world sucks.
if we're going to do that,
the world sucks. Now I'm a juicer.
We have to come up with sufficient rules to explain, okay, when you shoot up, this is what it does to you, both for better and for worse. This is what you get out of it, and this is how it's destroying you.
But you win the 96 Olympiad that's held between the broken down lighthouse over there and that goalpost that's only half rusted off.
What about profanity? And we're not talking about novelization. We're talking about the main rule book. Let's say you have a little section that you write in the first person. Do you drop the F-bomb?
You have to make a very simple thing clear. It's like, when you roll initiative, you roll 2 F and D6. We're not talking about that.
No, that goes back to the realm of what we talked about being gratuitous and unnecessary.
I think we could almost look at movies as a mold of what to imitate for that. Take an action movie that's rated R and an action movie that's rated PG-13. Probably the same base story. In one of them, the main character's dropping the F-bomb left and right, and in the other, he only gets to do it once, if even that.
Yeah, let's talk about the movie actually right along those lines. Let's talk about some of the historical movies recently that have been rated R. I guess going over the past 10, 15 years, Glory, Saving Private Ryan,
yeah,
where the movie directors felt that they had to be gory to make a point about
the
Glory.
They were obscene, they were racist, they were gory, they had all this stuff.
Right, and it was necessary.
It was still a great movie,
To communicate really what was going on then. So I guess if we were trying to turn Glory into an RPG, or if we were to approach that movie as if it was an RPG, when you start off with your field document, part of your fields wanting to represent authentically the horrors of war, and represent authentically the social climate that existed during Civil War America, it's no longer gratuitous. What you back up now to is the previous point of don't caricature. You know, be honest about what was going on. And they did. I mean, they showed a lot of the weaknesses and a lot of the foolishness on really every side of that conflict. I want to wrap this up then. Note number one is, as you guys go to our forums to discuss this, please keep in mind that on the forums, we try to keep religious and political and those kinds of digs non-existent. All right, now to wrap this subject up then with something that's relevant to this conversation, one of the things that I was going to talk about, you can take some simple steps to handle these things in a way that is reasonable to everyone when you do them in your role-playing game, outside of don't character, don't be gratuitous. One of the things we may do with Skies of Glass at some point, put a simple disclosure on it. As you listen to like the debate over role-playing games and movies and what should kids have access to, one of the regular mantras you hear from civil libertarians is disclose what's in there and allow people to self-regulate, or allow consumers to make an informed decision. So if your role-playing game is going to delve into a lot of these off-color subjects, which Skies of Glass will to at least some degree, you know, put a disclosure in the front of it, on the have a little foreword saying, hey, by the way, we talk about these things in here. Here's why they're in there. If you're offended by it, don't pick up the book, you know, or have a little label on the cover or something, that just whatever you feel is appropriate to giving people some kind of an honest warning about what they're getting into when they open this book. Actually, I believe that is in World of Darkness. At least the editions of the books I have, if you open it up, they have little explanations in the front of them explaining this is what we intended to do with the game, and this is kind of the context within which we wanted to discuss these subjects. Okay, then let us wrap this podcast up completely with our Skies of Glass question and answer session. Our Skies of Glass question, and this one, kind of like our moth question from earlier, actually comes from several people.
Mutant
so
moths.
There is no individual I can associate this one with. We had several people bring this one up and bat this around. The question is, why are we having the bombs drop 100 years in the future?
Oh, this debate is still raging.
Right. Yes, it is.
Let me explain, or let us explain, both sides of this, and then kind of answer why we chose the year that we did, which is 2109. When we started writing this, we did not want to put the game too far into the future because we were concerned that we would detach the game from the real world.
And look stupid in 10 years when we're totally wrong.
That too. But if I nuke the world of the year 3500, even if I call it Earth, yeah, nobody cares. It's not your Earth anymore. It's somebody else's Earth in some other time period, and you cannot emotionally in any way associate with
it. If I can't say this happens in a couple years, I don't care.
So, okay, well, let's follow that. Some people made that counter-argument. If it doesn't happen really soon, it already creates that kind of detachment. So why didn't we nuke the world in 2010 or 2020? Or even go back a little and create our own alternate timeline and nuke the world back in the 1980s?
Alternate timeline does not equal realism.
Ronald Reagan would have never allowed that to happen.
He would have personally stopped everyone.
Reagan smashed.
Slapped the nukes out of orbit.
But the answer to this is, when we created Skies of Glass, we envisioned certain things in there that we just kind of wanted in the macro feel that simply we can't do with the current level of technology. And some of these really have not yet come out in any of the setting documents we've released so far. Some of them have, like we talk about the genetic constructs in our macro field document or macro setting document.
Nexus 7 series.
But we also have some other things, like, for example, we may put a colony or two out within the solar system, which just is not reasonably going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, or if they do, they're not going to be of any significant size. So we wanted to put some buffer room in there to allow us to develop technology further than it has come already, to enable some changes to the macro setting without getting so far into the future that the world just becomes detached from the audience emotion.
Unfortunately, I've already begun construction of the Death Star, so that blows this entire discussion out of the water. I expect it to be done in 5 years. Continue.
In fact, we're going to have a great Skies of Glass box set that's going to be the Death Star deck plans. All of them.
Oh, yes. And then we're going to make the play set.
It's going to be awesome. Expansion.
Yeah. All right. Well, as brilliant as that is, I guess that about wraps it up for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time. See ya. This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in the show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.